Welcome to episode 428 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Recording on a Monday night, which is super, super, I honestly can't remember the last time we recorded on a Monday night, but it's because this week is Halloween, and sorry, trick-or-treating trumps podcasting.
Ooh, so is this the spooky episode?
I hope this isn't the episode where the Halloween demons like wreck everything, because we've been having all kinds of Skype problems tonight.
Hopefully not.
So hopefully we can get through this without Skype crashing or dropping our call any more times, because we've actually got a fair amount of stuff to talk about. Maybe not quite as many stories, but some really big stories, I think. But before we get into the news, we, of course, want to cover our latest listener feedback. These were sent in to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, both from longtime listeners and somewhat frequent messengers. Let's call them messengers, sure. First one is from Paul. He says, does the NVIDIA Shield 16 gig version work well as a Plex server, or do you need the 500 gigabyte pro version? Well, Paul, that's actually an easy question for me to answer, because I have the 16 gigabyte version and I'm using it as a Plex server. There's one big caveat, and I've tried to mention this in previous episodes, but let's make it super clear for everybody now. You need buffer space for buffering the recordings of live TV and stuff like that if you're planning to do Plex DVR, especially. And it all has to happen on internal storage. And 16 gigabytes is not enough for that. You will get error messages that pop up and say, you know, insufficient storage or something like that. There's an easy solution, though. You have to add add another storage device in addition to that external drive that you might be using, or NAS or whatever. You'll need to either use a USB flash drive. This works for any version of the NVIDIA Shield. Or if you have the original version of the NVIDIA Shield TV, it had a micro SD slot. So you can get a micro SD card and pop it in. In either case, whether it's micro SD or USB flash drive, when you insert it into the Shield, it's going to ask you if you want to format it as internal storage. The answer is yes, because that's the only way this will work. So I went out and I got a 64 gig micro SD card for, I don't know, 15 or 20 bucks, whatever they are nowadays. Shoved that in, formatted it as internal storage, and everything works smoothly. But I'm pretty sure the newest version of the Shield doesn't have micro SD. So you'll have to go the USB route. And again, just to be super duper clear here, if you're plugging in like a 4 terabyte external USB drive for doing all of your recordings and all of your movie libraries and all that stuff on that, don't do that as internal storage. I tried that. I had all sorts of weird funkiness. Leave that as a normal external drive. Get something else to format as internal storage. Plus, that external drive, the big one that you're going to plug in, it's nice to be able to remove that occasionally to throw more content on it, because the only real other big downside to using an NVIDIA Shield TV as a Plex server is you kind of have to use one of these external drives for it to work well, but you can't share folders on an external drive across the network. So if you want to copy new, like maybe you've ripped a new movie that you got and you want to put it on that drive, you're going to have to unplug it from your NVIDIA Shield, walk it over to a computer, copy the file over that way. It's pain, but for me, it's not something I do very often, so it's okay. Or if you've got a NAS set up, you can just be using a NAS for all of that stuff.
I'm curious, how fast does the USB drive need to be? I would imagine that a micro SD card is going to be pretty fast, and you buy them at different speeds, but does a USB thumb drive, like, can you buy them to have different speed ratings? How does that work?
Well, I know that there are USB 3 thumb drives, so those would be super fast. I don't know for sure about USB 2 thumb drives. but there are USB thumb drives. I'm not sure how expensive a USB 3 fast, like 64-ish gigabyte thumb drive would be. You probably don't need 64. The Plex website has documentation on this. I think their recommendation is 32, but I was like, eh, I've got a couple of tuners. I'm probably going to be buffering multiple things at a time. I'll just go for the bigger one. And in microSD, those things are so cheap, it really wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. Always better to have more.
Right, right.
All right, our next message is from a longtime listener and friend of the show, Roger. He says, I'm still running two Windows 7 media centers connecting to two HD Home Run Primes. Almost daily when we turn on the media center, we get a message that no tuners are found or all tuners are in use. A reboot usually resolves the issue, but as you can imagine, not helping the spouse acceptance factor. Any ideas? Yikes. So this seems like it's very similar to the problem that I was having, but not as bad because I couldn't actually resolve my problem with a reboot. Right. My problem was something that survived a reboot, unfortunately. So I wonder if the answer to this is the same as the answer to mine, which unfortunately ended up being reinstall Windows on top of Windows and reinstall the HD Home Run Prime stuff, and it should all start working again.
Yeah. So the obvious things to definitely check are, do you have the latest firmware on your HD Home Run Prime? You know, are the drivers up to date on your PC? Given all of that, which I'm sure they are, then maybe you might want to reach out to HD Home Run, to Silicon Dust. Like, they've got good support. You should reach out to them and see if they can help you. I have two other possible solutions. The first one, and I'm trying to do this from memory because it's been a while since I've used my used any Windows 7 Media Center, because I don't do that anymore. But in the settings for Media Center, there's an option called Optimize Windows Media Center or something like that. All that really does, and you can schedule that for running at like 3 a.m. or whatever. All that really does, from my understanding, is restarts all of the Windows Media Center stuff. That might not work because it sounds like Roger is putting his computer to sleep, maybe. I'm not exactly sure on the situation here, whether it's going to sleep or if he's completely turning it off. I'm betting that he's not turning it off if a reboot is what's fixing it, because then, you know, turning it on would put you in that clean state anyway. So I'm thinking he's probably doing sleep mode, not turning it off. So another option, and obviously this isn't ideal, but stop using sleep mode. I mean, I don't know how power hungry your Windows 7 Media Center PC is, but maybe just don't use sleep mode. Like, I never, ever had any success with sleep mode. I just left mine running all the time. That seemed to be by far the most reliable way to run a Windows 7 Media Center box.
Yeah, me too. And I hate to admit that, because that was one of the things that was supposed to really work with that Windows 7 version, but I never got that to work properly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to your hardware. Like, there's a lot of things that play into how well sleep mode is going to work. And yeah, I would try just disabling that and see how that goes, unless you're running some monster rig that is just sucking down juice like crazy and you don't want to pay for the electric bill increase on that. So give all those a try. Hopefully one of those will fix the problem. You could also potentially try, I don't know how badly you need all six tuners. Maybe try turning one off, like removing one, seeing if the problem goes away. If it doesn't, add it back in, remove the other one. Maybe there's just an issue with one of those tuners and the first one that it hits, because Windows Media Center kind of gets locked into a tuner priority order, and it'll basically always start with the same tuner, always. And it could just be that the one that it's starting on is having issues. So maybe try pulling that out to test that theory and swap them out that way. Lots of different things there for you to try. Sorry, we don't have an instant easy answer for you. That is just one of the things we love about dealing with home theater PCs, right?
Yeah, and by the way, my suggestion was the most severe of all of those. So do all of Josh's suggestions first.
Yeah, don't go installing Windows. When you did that installing Windows over Windows, did it make it so that you didn't lose all of your copy protected recordings?
Yeah, you don't lose stuff when you do that.
Okay.
All right. Let us move on. So we don't have a feature story tonight. Actually, this first story is about a video service, and it very well could be a feature story. It's a pretty big deal, actually.
Yeah, it is.
So YouTube TV was first released when it came out as primarily a mobile option for getting live TV service. They took a mobile-first approach when Google rolled it out, and they did have the ability to put it on a big screen using Chromecast. Well, they heard a lot of feedback from customers who just wanted to be able to use it on the TV without having to deal with Chromecast and all of that. So they have said that they're going to be rolling out new applications. They're going to have a YouTube TV app available on the big screen for Android TVs and for the Xbox One. And then coming later,
What?
I know. Xbox One. How about that? And then also coming later for Apple TV, Roku, and smart TVs. They're going to hit Sony, LG, and Samsung smart TVs. So they are really doing a broad distribution here. We'll talk in a minute about how they're pulling that off. But this is a pretty big deal because now you're going to be able to get this service on your Xbox One right on the as an app, just like you would load YouTube or any other app. And as I understand it, it is a separate app from the YouTube app itself. It will be a separate thing for YouTube TV. And the reason that, not the reason, but the way that they're pulling this off by getting it out to so many platforms is this is an HTML5 app. So it's essentially a web application that is being bundled into the different appropriate wrappers so that it'll work on these different platforms. You may have noticed that when I talked about this, I didn't mention anything about Amazon or Fire TV devices. Funny about that. Nobody seems to be getting along with Amazon these days.
Hey, I'm okay with that. It seems like Google has turned their eye away from Microsoft and pointed it like the eye of Sauron on Amazon. And that is okay with me because I'm not really into the Amazon ecosystem that much. So, and frankly, that's not much of a turn because Microsoft and Amazon are both in Seattle. So it wasn't even that difficult.
There you go. Now, there's one thing that I want to point out here. They've also done some things to make this work better for your big screen. And one of those things, and this I think is probably the most important thing for these types of viewers, is a much more robust program guide, like a traditional grid guide that's going to show you what's coming up. That's something that was missing from the mobile apps.
Yeah. So I've known about this story for hours now, and I still can't get over the fact that it's on the Xbox One. Like I thought there would be no way that Google would ever, ever, ever release this app for the Xbox One. Like it makes sense for them to do it. I just didn't think they would because they don't like to work nicely with Microsoft. I mean, the YouTube app on the Xbox One isn't good. It's not very good at all. People complain about it all the time and use third-party apps instead. But somehow we're getting this. And I think, I mean, maybe it's just so they can make more money. You know, for example, I have a coworker who subscribed to YouTube TV and really liked it, but his primary viewing device is an Xbox One, and he's got Chromecast devices, but they're a little flaky and they don't work the greatest. So he canceled his YouTube TV service because he wasn't going to deal with Chromecast. So I told him today, I'm like, hey, did you see the news? YouTube TV on Xbox One. I can't believe it. It must mean the world is ending. But if the world doesn't end, this is really good news for you. And he immediately re-signed up for YouTube TV.
Oh, now, there you go.
Unfortunately, the app isn't out today, and he didn't realize that, and I didn't realize that when I told him. I also didn't expect him to immediately sign back up for YouTube TV, but it should be out on the Xbox One in just, it says a matter of days, same with Android TV, and then weeks for Apple TV, Roku, and smart TVs. So that's awesome. You know, and on the topic of HTML5 apps, I know that that makes you a little leery, Richard, because you're all about the native app experience.
Right.
I am 98% sure that all of these new Plex apps are HTML apps also.
That might be possible. I don't know. I don't honestly know. Now, I will say that, you know, you were just kind of slamming on the YouTube app that's on the Xbox. That is an HTML5 app. I mean, that mm-hmm. is the experience that YouTube created to be available universally, where they don't have to build something natively. And that is the experience that most people don't like for YouTube.
Right. But that isn't necessarily because it's an HTML app. Not necessarily.
That's true. That's true. That's a fair statement. Yes. Yes. So yeah. We'll have to see how that plays out. I'm obviously, you know, intrigued by this. I think if they have a free startup or anything like that, I haven't really taken this very seriously or looked at it before, but I think so that I can have a better perspective of how this works, this makes sense for me to at least try it.
Well, are they in your market? Because they're only in 50 markets. I mean, 50 is a lot, but
that is a lot. Yeah, they are in the DC Baltimore market, from what I understand. So I should be able to get this. So that's actually a really good point, right? Let's do a little refresher on what YouTube TV includes. It's about 40 channels, including the local networks, in up to 50 markets now. And that has been growing. So they've been expanding that quite a bit. It costs $35 a month, and you get unlimited DVR service, and that has a little asterisk after the word unlimited, because it's unlimited, but the content only stays there for 9 months. Now, I say only, that's longer than other services that get rid of it after 3 months or 6 weeks, depending on what other service we're talking about. So it's not so bad. It's pretty good, actually.
There is one other really, really weird thing about this DVR service that I learned today. There's no option for deleting.
What is that about?
I don't know. Apparently, it also doesn't have some other common DVR things, like saying, I only want to record this show if it's a new episode. Like, if you say, I want to watch, I don't know, pick anything that's also in syndication, and it's going to record every episode that's on any channel. And that could get real annoying real fast. So they've still got some, you know, some things to figure out in terms of TV DVR experience. But the price is pretty decent. And it looks like the overall UI and the experience that it's offering is pretty good, including that grid guide. So might be worth checking out.
Yep. Good stuff.
All right. Let's move on to some audio news. This one really shocked me. Maybe not quite as much as Google doing anything with Microsoft, but unique and surprising nonetheless. And that is that Microsoft, with the Xbox, is now joining the WISA Association. That's WISA. It's the wireless, essentially, it's the Wireless Speaker Association. If you're not familiar with what these are, we reviewed the Axum Q wireless receiver and speakers last year. Yeah, it was late last year. It was about a year ago.
Right.
And the idea is pretty sweet. In the Axum setup, you get an audio video receiver that has six HDMI inputs and then 5.1 or 7.1, so five speakers plus a subwoofer. And there's no wires running from the speakers to the receiver. There's nothing. It's all wireless. You plug all of the speakers in to a wall outlet for power because they've got the amplifiers built into them. But all of that communication between the receiver and the speakers is completely wireless, which is really, really great if you've got, you know, a new place and you don't have wire run to all of the places where you need speakers. Mm-hmm. It also works really, really well. You might expect latency issues. Nope, it handles that. And it is a standard that's actually pretty well standard. You know, you could buy that Axum setup, or maybe you also really like the speakers that Klipsch sells that also support this Weisse standard. You could use those too, or maybe in place of. Maybe you like the Klipsch subwoofer more than the, you know, that sort of thing. So that's what Weisse is. With an Xbox partnership, now none of this was actually announced. The only thing announced was Xbox is now part of the association. That's it. They didn't say that they're actually going to implement this. But what this could look like is you get an Xbox One, you hook it up to your TV, and then you just buy some of these speakers. And the Xbox communicates with those speakers directly and wirelessly. You don't need an AV receiver. You don't need wires running all over the place. That's a pretty sweet setup. And since the Xbox One does everything, like it could totally work, right? Because you're gaming on it, and then you've got your Netflix app and your YouTube TV app and all of these other TV and video apps. This could totally work for somebody.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused about that not needing an AVR thing. I think that's true if the only thing you have in your setup is the Xbox. But is that realistic? Like, is somebody only going to have an Xbox and not any other components? No other streaming devices or a cable box? I guess theoretically, you could have the cable box go through the Xbox. This might make that a more viable solution, although right. I tend to think that Microsoft themselves have kind of given up on that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely could. If you only have one other device, you could definitely just run that into the Xbox One's HDMI input. But that's a little bit kludgy, but it does right. work. It totally works. Yeah, I don't know how realistic this is of a scenario where people only have an Xbox One, yet they still want to spend the money on a really nice sound setup. You know, because these aren't cheap. Like this, the full setup from Axum is over $2,000. Now, many hundreds of that is the receiver, but still, you're going to be spending for a 5.1 setup just for speakers. It's still going to be over $1,000. So it's not cheap, and it's not absolute top of the line, because Weisse doesn't do Atmos yet. So if you want Atmos too, you're kind of out of luck there. So there's some kind of weird use cases there, but if you fit into it, it could be really, really slick if it ever actually happens.
The other thing I think is worth mentioning is that because these speakers each have amplifiers in them, these are typically more expensive than your average garden variety household entertainment system speakers.
Right. Yeah, they are.
So this is for someone who is likely to invest a little bit more in their media room environment.
Right. Yep, absolutely.
It's interesting. I don't know what it means, but it's interesting. It'll be fun to see what becomes of this. All right, well, I have an idea. Let's do something weird. Why don't I kick off the gaming section?
With some bad news.
Well, yeah. So, you know how all along I was kind of a naysayer on the Kinect, and then they bundled it with the Xbox One, and then I started using it, and I liked it because it just recognized me and it could hear me, and it was just a convenient way of interacting with the Xbox. But people didn't like that they had to pay for it, so they unbundled it. But it was nonetheless the fastest selling device ever in a consumer electronics space when it launched. And now Microsoft is not going to make it anymore.
Yeah, this was another big surprise announcement this week. They didn't really give a lot of detail here. They said, we're not manufacturing it anymore. They didn't say, we're not supporting it anymore. They didn't say that it's just going to completely stop working or stop working in these specific ways anytime soon. But they're definitely not making any more of them. So I'm not really sure what that means for the future of all of this. I was like you. I never bought a Kinect for my Xbox 360, but was pretty happy with it when it came with the Xbox One. I used it a ton for the voice stuff. I liked the video sign-in stuff too. I also liked it for some of the games, or at least one of them. I've really thought that its usage in Xbox Fitness was really cool and actually made me want to do some of those workout type things, which I normally wouldn't want to do, but it gamified it in a really cool and really accurate way. But even that went away last year, or this year, I think it was. So I don't know what to expect in terms of will they continue to support this? Because right now, you can use, of course, the camera and the microphone for Skype calls. You can use them for Mixer streaming. You can use the microphone for voice chat when playing games, but that's kind of terrible, and I hate it when people do that because then I can hear everything else that's going on in their living room. But it also is one of the main ways that you can use Cortana in the living room.
Right.
And Microsoft is making a bigger and bigger push towards Cortana. And you know, since they launched Cortana, we've been saying it totally makes sense to have Cortana on the Xbox because people want to use voice assistants in their living room. And now the absolute best way to do Cortana in your living room is going away. Well, potentially going away.
Yeah, it's very strange. And I think last week we talked about some speculation that maybe if you had a Cortana speaker, why couldn't that be the microphone that then interacts with the Xbox? Could that speaker work together with your Xbox the way that the microphone from the Kinect did? And then you could still have your own webcam attached if you want video. But even that doesn't give you the precision video detection stuff that the Kinect did.
No, but and while that was super cool, like if you do a Skype call with a Kinect camera, and you, especially if you have multiple people in the room, when someone starts talking, it'll actually like shift the focus of the video over to the other person. Or if you're just one person talking and you're moving around, it'll follow you, which is all really cool, but not really that necessary. And you mentioned webcams. Webcam support did just come to the Xbox One. I know it works for Mixer. I don't know if it works for Skype, but it must.
Oh,
I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
I should try that. But even if their plan is, well, you know, you could buy a Harman Kardon Invoke and use that in your living room to potentially control the Xbox, which I don't think works. I don't think you can actually control an Xbox through a secondary device like the Harman Kardon Invoke or even your phone or a Windows 10 PC. I imagine that functionality will come eventually, but a $200 Harman Kardon Invoke, probably not the most economical way to control your Xbox with your voice.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. 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 And if you had these attached to your Xboxes, and in theory, they could have been another node for Cortana in your home, just in your family room or living room. Although, granted, in sleep mode, the only thing that they were really listening for was a wake-up command.
Right.
So they would have had to perhaps rework what that sleep mode would be if it was listening all the time and able to do stuff. But yeah, it's confusing to me. I guess as a device that was geared toward gaming, I can see that they've done absolutely nothing with this thing in the last couple of years, right? They haven't come out with any games that are geared specifically toward the device. They, I think, really only had like one or two games that even had any specific support for it in the last couple of years. So clearly they weren't developing to it. Clearly developers weren't developing to it. So cut your losses. You know, this might just fall into the category of things that Microsoft has said, you know, if it's not working it for us, we're going to get rid of it. And so they are.
Yep. Well, we'll have to wait and see what they end up doing with that, what the future of Cortana is. I kind of hope that they're still thinking about this and that there will be interaction with other devices and the Xbox, and that they're working with some hardware manufacturers to make something like the Echo Dot, you know, something that's small, cheap, you know, that you can put in your living room that's basically just the microphone. They could then control the Xbox. Like, that would be fine. You know, if it's a $30 to $50 device that is basically just a smart microphone for controlling it, then cool. But I've heard a lot of people talk about, like, you know, let's have a little microphone that we can plug into the controller, which would actually work because you can control Cortana through a headset plugged into the controller. But I want something that's always on. I don't want to have to turn my controller on to be able to do the voice control stuff. It could also be a voice control remote, but those tend to not be always listening either. A lot of the voice control remotes that I've played with, you still have to push a button. And
right.
I just want to talk. I just want to use the wake word and talk.
Right.
Because I have kids, and kids lose the remotes all the time.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, everything that we've talked about has been a we'll have to see story. Is anything happening now?
There are some things happening now. GameStop has a really interesting new program that they're rolling out now, and it is called Power Pass. It's a new sort of subscription program. You pay $60. That's a coincidental cost. It's the same price as a brand new game. And for that $60, over the course of 6 months, you'll be able to walk into any GameStop and say, I want to take home that pre-owned game. Any game. Any game that is pre-owned in their inventory, you can take it home. It's basically like renting games whenever you want, without having to worry about due dates, without having to worry about, you know, paying by the day or anything like that. You give them $60, and for the next 6 months, you can take home one game at a time from anything they have pre-owned. It doesn't matter how old it is. You know, if Call of Duty World War II comes out and someone trades it in after 3 days and they happen to have it on the shelf, you can go in and, as part of your subscription, take it home. It's a pre-owned game. I think this is really, really neat. It does have one little caveat that you have to be a member of their Power Up thing, which I don't know a lot of the details about what a Power Up membership includes, but it's free. Don't confuse this with their Power Up Pro thing, which is not free and gives you discounts on games and stuff like that. Instead, this is just some free club membership, basically. You join that, then you pay the $60 for Power Pass, and you get total access to this. The other really cool thing about this, the really smart thing about this, it's maybe not the coolest, but it's really smart, especially to be rolling it out at this time of year. This is something you can buy as a gift to give to somebody else. So if you've got kids that are always bugging you to get games, or, you know, just anyone else in your life that's a gamer that you're trying to figure out what to get for them, like, games can actually be kind of hard, because if Jen wanted to buy me an Xbox game for Christmas, chances are that by Christmas, I've already bought all the games that I want that are coming out, you know? So this I think works out really well for a lot of scenarios like that. So I think that's a really cool new initiative from GameStop. And I'm going to be very curious to see how well this gets adopted from people. It's similar to Gamefly in that, but Gamefly mails them to you, but, you know, you got to kind of wait and see if things end up in the queue and what you end up getting. And plus, there's just the turnaround time of dealing with the mail. And then, of course, the downside of this is you got to leave your house and go to a store. So there's that, I guess. But I think this is a pretty cool program that I would actually consider signing up for. So we'll see if I actually do that. And I'm curious if any of you decide to sign up for GameStop Power Pass. Now, one other thing I want to get into. We are now just over a week away from the Xbox One X finally launching. Richard, it feels like we've been talking about the Xbox One X forever. It's certainly been months and months and months, because they announced this thing last year, and now we're a week away from getting it.
Right. I mean, they announced this and the Xbox S on the same day.
You're right. It was E3 2016. That was June of 2016 that we first heard about the Xbox One X. Well, it is a reality in about a week from now. And I'm really, really excited about this. I wanted to pass on a couple of quick tips for anyone who is getting one. And these tips are especially for people who already have an Xbox. There's a couple of things that you can do to prepare yourself for getting that Xbox One X. Because imagine this. You've been waiting for a year and a half to get this thing. It shows up at your door and you just want to jump right into games, except that it doesn't have any games installed on it. And all of these games are like 60 gigs or more. So to download them, it's going to take hours. And that's hours that you're not playing your brand new console. So here's the trick, guys. There are two ways to transfer games from one Xbox to another Xbox. The first one is fairly obvious and pretty simple because it's been available for a while, and that's use an external hard drive. All the games that you want on your Xbox One X, put them on your current Xbox One, plug an external hard drive in, you know, grab one of those super big ones, transfer them to the hard drive, and then when you get your Xbox One X, just plug it into the Xbox One X and you're good to go. The other way is brand new with the latest dashboard update, and that is you can now transfer these over your local network. Just put them both on the same network, go into Settings, Network. There's a new option called Network Transfer and a checkbox to enable that on that specific machine. So do that now. Go into your Xbox that you have now and enable Network Transfer. And then when you get your Xbox One X, you go to the same section. By the way, this works on Xboxes now. This isn't an Xbox One X thing. Go into that network transfer section. It's going to show you all of the other Xboxes on your network. You pick one, and then it shows you all of the games and apps that are on it. And then you just go through, check off the ones that you want to copy, and it just copies them all over your network. And that's going to be way faster than downloading over the internet. But there's one more really, really important tip, and this is specific to the Xbox One X. Lots of Xbox One X games are, well, not Xbox One X games. There's no such thing. But there are games that are enhanced for the Xbox One X. So that means 4K textures and resolution upgrades for things, plus other enhancements. All of that stuff is bigger. And Microsoft doesn't force everyone to download them, because if you don't have a One X, there's no reason to download all of that stuff. So what you can do, go to the Xbox that you have now. Go to Systems, or Settings, System, Backup and Transfer. And in there is a checkbox labeled Download 4K Game Content. Do that. Then also go into the Updates section of System and make sure that you've got the checkbox for Keep My Games and Apps Up to Date, which you probably do. Like, why wouldn't you do that? Then that's going to do all of that downloading of that extra 4K content onto the Xbox that you already have, so that then when you go to transfer it to your Xbox One X, everything is there and you're absolutely ready to go with the best experience that you can possibly get with your brand new machine. And you're not going to be sitting there waiting for hours for things to download.
So I have a question. Why can you do this? Why can you download 4K content onto machines that can't take advantage of it? Why would they enable that?
I think because it can. Because remember, oh, actually, no, it can't. I was going to say, because it does that super sampling of 4K textures for 1080p and all that, but that's also only on the One X. So I think the most optimistic and giving them the biggest benefit of the doubt reason for this is they were thinking ahead and wanted to allow people to prepare for getting their Xbox One X. So they made this available on every console. I think the more realistic reason is they didn't want to have to put a flag, you know, in the code to say, only make this option available if it's an Xbox One X system. And instead, it's just built into the operating system that's shared across all of them. I think that's probably the more realistic reason for this. It's just part of the OS.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that that's there.
Yeah. And that's also brand new with the latest UI update. So there you go. Get yourself ready because this is coming next week. And I think I finally made up my mind as to whether or not I'm going to keep my pre-order. I know I've been talking about this for a couple of weeks as to whether I was, you know, I just wasn't sure.
So what's it going to be, Josh?
I'm going to keep it.
Of course you are.
I really want this thing. So next week, I don't know, maybe it comes out on Tuesday, Richard. That's the night that we record. I'm going to want to play with my Xbox One X, not record a podcast.
Hey, that's your problem. I'll be here.
Yeah, I guess I'm just going to have to tear myself away from it for a little while. All right. Well, it is November if you're not listening to this live, and that means new Games with Gold. It also means that because their Xbox One schedule for Games with Gold is weird, you've still got a hangover game until the middle of the month. That's the Turing Test on Xbox One. Starting November 1st and all month long, you can also grab Trackmania Turbo. And then in the second half of November, you can get Tales from the Borderlands, all five episodes of that season of that game available for free. And on the 360 side, for the first half of the month, it's Nights into Dreams. And the second half of the month is a game I've never even heard of. It's called Deadfall Adventures. The description makes it sound like Indiana Jones sort of story as a first-person shooter. I have no idea if that's any good. Nights into Dreams looks cool. And Tales from the Borderlands is definitely cool. Trackmania Turbo, it's fun for a free game, but it's kind of hard as an arcade racer game. So those are all available for free. And even those 360 games are all playable on your Xbox One through backwards compatibility. All right, that's it for our news tonight, Richard. Let's get into what's going on in our entertainment centers, because we've got a fair amount of stuff going on there too. So let's start with what's going on in your entertainment center.
So I took on a project this weekend, and as folks know, I've been using Dolby Atmos, and I have decided that, Josh, you were right. My front speakers are too high vertically to get the proper reflection that they need off of the ceiling for the upward, the high channels. So I bought ceiling speakers. And I decided that I would stick with my 712 configuration right now. So that means I'm installing two ceiling speakers. And that's what I did this weekend. I measured the distances in the room about 7 or 8 times, I think. Because as you know, Josh, I have a really weird family room configuration where the television is in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not good for audio reflection in a room. It is.
No.
It's like the worst situation for audio. So, well, the worst situation other than being in perhaps a perfectly square room. That too is bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up measuring out, figuring out the angles, coming up with the best location that I could in relative positions to, like, you know, beams in the ceiling and stuff like that. So overall, I think it came out pretty well. It looks good. They align with other stuff in the ceiling, like lighting and everything. I made sure that there wasn't anything that just looked like it was just going to be an eyesore. I haven't hooked them up yet. I did not have the speaker wire that I needed to connect them over the weekend. And I went out to get that on Sunday. And by the time I got home, I was just too tired and didn't feel like doing it. And this week, I'm home alone. And I don't know, maybe I'm unnecessarily paranoid or something, but I don't like the idea of climbing up around in the rafters when I'm home by myself without anyone else around.
So are the speakers installed? You just don't have the wire run to them?
That's correct.
Okay. I need pictures of this. I want to see how it came out. You should post this on Twitter.
I can
think everyone's going to want to see how this looks, especially with your sort of odd configuration. I'm really, really curious how that looks. I'm sure it looks great because you wouldn't do it unless it looked really good.
Well, and I mean, frankly, it's two more holes in my ceiling, right? I have so many can lights in this room already. There are no fewer than 13. No, sorry, I undercounted. 18 can lights.
Oh my gosh.
In this room. Now, they're not all visible as you're facing the television, but there are wall washers, there are center cans, there are directional cans over the entertainment center. So it's just two more holes. I mean, Wow. If anything, it looks less offensive than everything else that's in the ceiling. But yeah, that's a good idea. I'll take a picture and get it up there. Now, also in the hardware front, while I was up in the attic, I noticed, because I hadn't noticed since I hadn't been using it for a while, that my first generation Gray Box HD Home Run over-the-air ClearQuam tuner was finally dead.
Wow. That's, what is that, like 12 years old?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. So I think I probably got some good use out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say you got your money's worth out of that old box.
So I was a little bit saddened by that and thinking now that I'm probably going to end up getting maybe the HD Home Run Connect or something like that, because I don't have an over-the-air tuner and I have an antenna. Mm. So I'd like to be able to use that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've got Plex DVR that's now not working, right?
Well, no, because I can use that with my HD Home Run Prime.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Because I don't have protected channels.
Yeah, you jerk.
Speaking of channels, watching Mr. Robot, enjoying that, keeping up with that, Firefly and Game of Thrones. I started watching a new TV show. Well, I should say I started watching an old TV show. I started rewatching, and by the way, Josh, I never watched this in its first few years. Cheers.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So 271 episodes, and I only have 263 to go.
Well, you're home alone this week, so you ought to be able to crank through that pretty quickly.
So I want to tell people the reason that I'm watching this is that one of my favorite podcasters, Jenny Josephson, who you may also know as the executive producer of Make Me Smart and also of, I believe, the Marketplace Tech Podcasts, she and her husband have a podcast called Tell It Anyway. And it's essentially a storytelling podcast where they get some of their friends to just share stories about their lives. And these guys are connected. They've worked in the industry, in the entertainment space. He's actually a television writer. This is what he does. And she's worked in the industry for years. So they're rewatching this and they're looking at it from their perspective, like, you know, thinking about the shots that they're blocking and how they're how they have things scripted and looking at it from a different perspective than just, oh yeah, we're rewatching Cheers and sharing our thoughts about it. They really have a very insider view about things. And listening to the first couple episodes of them doing that inspired me to go back and actually start watching this. So it's kind of fun because I never really watched the ones with Diane. I only ever knew it when Kirstie Alley had come on the show.
Oh.
Which was like, what, halfway through?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I never really watched it myself. So I'm curious, is this on Netflix or something? Like where
it is available on Hulu.
Oh, Hulu. Okay.
And it looks fantastic. Huh. And it's what, like 30 years old?
Right. Jeez, that's great.
So, yeah, yeah. As I mentioned, I started The Defenders, so I'm a couple episodes into that, keeping up with the usual stuff, Big Bang Theory, Modern Family, This Is Us, Flash, Arrow. This weekend, I don't know why. Well, of course I know why. What am I thinking? Halloween. Showtime had a Penny Dreadful marathon. Penny Dreadful was the Victorian horror story kind of anthology where they took all these characters from Victorian times and wove them together, put them together in this intricate storyline over the course of three seasons. I loved it. It was amazing character development and amazing storytelling. And we got sucked into it about, I would say, a third of the way through the season two part of the marathon, and ended up watching to the end of season two last night, very tired. But I love that show, and it just reminded me how incredible it is. And just even the soundtrack, the music from that show is so complex and so well orchestrated. Love it, love it, love it. Also watched what you, I believe, just in the past episode deemed as the worst of the Bourne movies, which is Jason Bourne.
Yep.
It was okay. It wasn't terrible.
It's okay, but it's the worst of those movies, right? So there are five movies in the Jason Bourne Bourne series now.
Right. And I haven't seen four.
Okay.
So I don't have a full point of comparison. I would say that this was not as good as one, two, or three. I think that is a fair statement.
I think that's a gross understatement. It's not even close to the first three movies.
But I wanted to see it, and it was one of the free movies that we just got.
I figured that's why you
movies
watched
anywhere.
It.
Exactly. So I'm like, hey, I'll watch that.
Yeah.
All right. Not? How about you? What's going on in your entertainment center?
You know, I will start with what I've watched, which is not much. The Friday night, everyone wanted to do a movie night here at home, and they picked Cars 3. I didn't even know this was out. I think it just came out digitally.
I still haven't seen it.
So I looked for a way to rent it digitally and couldn't find a way. It looked like it was only available for purchase. So I thought, it's probably good. Let's just buy it. So I jumped onto Movies Anywhere and looked for a way to purchase it ideally in UHD 4K. And that, of course, led me to, no surprise, Vudu. And I picked it up there. I think it was $23 on Vudu in 4K, so not terrible. And it was, well, I can't really say it was a great movie because I didn't watch all of it. I had something else that I needed to do, so I bailed out with probably 40-ish minutes to go in the movie. But up until that point, I was liking it a lot. It wasn't quite as good as the original Cars, but it was way better than Cars 2, which maybe isn't saying much because Cars 2 was pretty terrible. But yeah, there was a lot of really fun and really funny stuff for both the kids and for Jen and I. So we really liked it. As soon as it finished, Eden ran upstairs and was like, "Dad, it was so good." And then immediately spoiled the ending for me. Like, thanks, kid. We've got to work on that one and her not spoiling movies for people. So I won't do that for you
kids
all.
Kids don't know spoilers.
Yeah, go and check out Cars 3. It's fun. And then on the hardware front, I actually have a fair amount to talk about here, too. Last week, I mentioned that I'd been wanting to build a new computer. But I think I also mentioned that I was considering just buying a computer if it worked. And I had seen an ad for an HP machine at Costco. Well, that Costco deal started last Friday, and it was on an HP Performance Pavilion 580-137C. Just rolls right off the tongue. And I ended up buying it because I couldn't pass up this deal. It's a desktop tower with the AMD Ryzen 7 1700 CPU. It has 16 gigs of RAM. It has a 1 terabyte 7200 RPM spinny disk hard drive. That's probably the worst part of this thing. It has a 4 gigabyte Radeon RX 550, which I think is unusual. When I've been trying to find comparison charts to compare it to the GPU that I already had, most of them list the 550 as only having 2 gigs of RAM. So I still don't really know how well it stacks up against my GTX 950, and I haven't had time to swap them out and deal with the nightmare of switching video drivers between AMD and NVIDIA. Like, I'm not looking forward to that at all. But this thing is running awesome. It's been really, really great. Obviously, that whole 1 terabyte spinny disk, that isn't going to cut it. but it has room for other drives and it has one more free SATA port. So I took my SSD and moved it from my old computer into this one. And that's now my primary hard drive and kept the 1 terabyte drive in there for storage. And it's running really, really, really well. I went the AMD route because I wanted those cores. This is an 8-core, 16-thread processor, and it is awesome. It is really, really good.
Nice.
So there are two big areas that my old computer is really struggling. My older computer was I think it was third generation Core i5 processor with 8 gigs of RAM, and playing PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds was just kind of, that game's rough on computers anyway. And then trying to do Mixer wasn't working the greatest. And it was a CPU limitation. There just wasn't enough CPU room to do all of this stuff at the same time. For streaming a game, there just wasn't extra overhead at all. Like, I tried streaming Battlegrounds. It just didn't work. Like, you would end up with a 3 frames per second video on Mixer if I was playing Battlegrounds. It just didn't work. And then I also occasionally had troubles just trying to do this podcast. So I wanted the cores because I knew that Mixer would support the cores. I know that my podcast production stuff supports the cores. And I figured the game stuff would too. So I immediately, once I got everything running, installed Battlegrounds, got that running, fired up a Mixer stream, and the game performed way better than on my old machine, and Mixer worked without a hitch. I had a friend immediately watching the Mixer stream, and he said it had no problems at all. So I've only scratched the surface on this new machine, but I'm loving it, and it's cheap. It is a $600 computer. For a point of reference, the processor alone, if you were to buy it at Newegg, is $300, and this is a whole computer. So hard to beat. Again, it's available at Costco. Online, it's back ordered like 3 weeks, I think, but you can still get it. I went on Friday, and actually I think this deal started on Thursday. I went on Friday. My local Costco still had 6 in stock. So if you're interested in this, maybe run to your local Costco first, because you might be able to pick it up that way. Otherwise, you're going to be waiting on the back order. But so far, I'm really, really happy with this machine.
And just to kind of qualify this, this is not your home theater PC. This is your desktop workhorse PC.
Correct. Yeah, this is the computer that I use for all of my PC gaming, for all of my podcast production stuff, and all of my computer programming, web development, mobile app development, all that stuff. So yeah, it needs to be a pretty powerful machine.
Nice.
Yeah. The other thing that I worked on this week, because my old computer that I was moving from, I had like hard drives just like shoved into it all over the place. It was a mess. It was a situation that I knew I needed to deal with at some point, and this was the time to do it. When I was at the meetup, what used to be called the Home Server Show meetup, back in September, I won a Synology DS216 Play. This is a lower-end Synology 2-bay NAS device that I hadn't set up yet because I needed to find drives to stick in it. And, you know, while doing all of this drive switcheroo stuff, I've freed up, one drive so far and shoved that in there. I've only just barely started using this, so I don't really have any experience yet on how well this works. I know that I can go to the web interface and set up user accounts, and I've been able to successfully copy files over to it like you would any NAS, and that worked fine. But I'm planning to look at the PC backup stuff and how well that works. I'm also, of course, planning to set up folders on it for my Plex library. I want to see how well my Plex server running on my NVIDIA Shield TV will work with a library that's stored on the NAS. And I also want to see if I can set up the Plex DVR stuff to record straight to the NAS and see how well that works. So look for all of that coming from me in the coming weeks as I get time to play with all that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's it for me. I don't think we have any announcements this week, do we? Okay. So that's going to do it for this week. If you want to get a hold of us, you can send us feedback or questions to us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at Digi Media Zone, D-I-G-I Media Zone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/the DMZ, or you can just shoot us an email, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, or use the contact form while you're browsing the website. We've also got other podcasts for you to check out. Richard, you've got a recent one for Home On, talking about home automation stuff. What's in store with your latest episode of Home On?
Yeah, so as I mentioned last week, the current episode is with Rose Thibodeau, and we look at a lot of the new security systems that were announced. You know what's even funny is that since we've done this episode, two additional companies have announced do-it-yourself smart home systems for security installations. So this is an area that's really heating up. Coming up next, Mike Wolf is going to join me. He, of course, is the curator of the Smart Kitchen Summit, and we're going to talk about the recent event as well as some of the sessions that I had.
Awesome. And then my other podcast here at the DMZ is, of course, Story Players, where we cover story and analyze story-driven video games. The latest episode of Life is Strange Before the Storm, that was episode 2. That's available now. If you haven't checked that out yet, you definitely should. Also, this week, we are finally wrapping up our 9-episode series on Mass Effect Andromeda. We have completed that game. We've recorded the final episode, and that will be releasing on Friday. So can't wait to hear your thoughts on Mass Effect Andromeda. And then we invite you to join us as we record this show, Entertainment 2.0. We always, almost always, record the show live and almost always do that on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. But it's not always, it's almost always, like this week. So your best bet, follow us on Twitter because we always tweet about when we will be recording and give you links and all of that, so you don't have to miss it. You can also subscribe to us on Mixer, and you'll get Mixer notifications as to when we have started going live. It's a lot of fun for us. There's video. It's the only way to see us on video. And there's a chat room so that you can be communicating with us one-on-one in real time. It's a lot of fun for us, and I think it's fun for you guys too. So come and do that next week at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, probably. But that's going to do it for episode 428. He's Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.